all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday, April 21st. Welcome to the state of Wisconsin Sense. It's another beautiful day up north. Not quite as beautiful as in the south. I've seen the satellite. I've seen the radar. But you know what? It's always a beautiful day up north. But it's also not so bad here in Wisconsin's capital city, where we are broadcasting today one last time from the palatial studios on University Avenue, somewhere in the middle of Madison. I don't know when I'll come down to Madison next time for a visit, but by that time, Civic Media will surely have fully moved into new digs just off the Capitol Square over at the top of State Street. Going to go check out the progress later on the new worldwide headquarters for Civic Media, and then grab some lunch after the Todd Alba Show with the aforementioned Mr. Alba and Mr. Aaron Sommers, who produces both of these shows. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's nice to have you here, and hopefully next time you're here, we are in the new studio.
And what will Aaron have in the new studio that he doesn't have here?
Windows.
Windows, baby. I've got a big old window here. I can see the traffic going by on University Avenue, not too far from the campus. People going back and forth on this main artery in town. But Aaron's in a closet right next door. But again, new studio coming. I think you're going to like it. I'm really looking forward to seeing the progress on that today.
Yeah, not only will I have a window to the outside, but I'll have a window to the studio so I can actually see the person I'm talking to.
which is key, because sometimes if I'm not looking at the camera feed or Todd or any of the other hosts, you can't see the producer waving wildly going, "You're on mute," or whatever the case may be. So it's going to be a great thing all around. Hey, coming up today, let's see. Let's start with, in this hour, let's call it putting fingers and twiddling thumbs. Because looking at this week's events, we have to ask ourselves about the grand old party and whether its elephant logo should be replaced with a pair of twiddling thumbs for what little is getting done in Madison and Washington and in other state capitals. And the things that are getting done, you are not going to like. I mean, the things just in Iowa this week, more beyond what we talked about the other day, it's just downright corrupt. Also, at the bottom of the hour, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil will join us to review the Dominion defamation settlement with the Fox political propaganda channel, and we will discuss the effectiveness of the recent Trump ad spoofing noted pudding lover Ron DeSantis. Then Kristen Lyerly is scheduled to join us later in the hour for today's history lesson and music break. And then she and I, in the second hour, will discuss A Tale of Two States. Now, thanks to 12 years of gerrymandered Republican rule, Wisconsin is now one of only 10 states left in the country, still losing out on federal money to provide more affordable health care to working families through Medicaid, known as Badger Care here. In Minnesota this week, the Democratic-controlled legislature is beefing up Medicaid, known as Minnesota Care over there, now adding a public option. So we will talk about how it works and how much Wisconsin continues to lose from the GOP's temper tantrum over the Affordable Care Act passing. And then later in the show, we will talk to Dan Schumacher. We'll talk about weekend sports and things like that. We normally talk to Mark Jacob on Fridays. He is off this week. We'll talk to him next week. And if you are watching the live video feed on Facebook or Twitter and saying something looks different, yes, it does. By coming down to Madison, it means I'm not working off my home computer where we have a whole different setup with many more bells and whistles and graphics and everything else. And Aaron and I had a lovely, fierce 15 minutes here before the show trying to see if we could get all that to work or not, looking for passwords and looking for things that I didn't store on my laptop here because they're stored back home. So Aaron, unlike most mornings when you're sitting here alone, I feel like we got your blood pressure going this morning, nice and early.
Yeah, I got to do some extra walking around and
and listening to me swear more than you otherwise hear. Yep.
Yeah, but it was so close.
I know. Almost. We almost had it. And next time we'll be in those fancy studios where we can probably log into all those other things a lot faster and easier. But anyway, getting back to the weekend sports, we're going to talk about that, but so will Aaron and I, because we're going to be part of the weekend sports. The Brewers are back home for a 9-game homestand, and we'd like you to be a part of it as well. I mean, you can't come to the game with us, but you can come to the series at some point. And I mean, in this case, 2 tickets to Sunday afternoon's game against the Boston Red Sox. So be listening later in this hour. It'll be, again, just an easy Brewers trivia question, and the first one through with the correct answer will get those 2 tickets to Sunday afternoon's game. So, you know, don't call in unless you know you can use them. We will email them to you, and then you can use them. So have that phone number standing by to call later in the hour. And those numbers, of course, are 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And we'll have all that still ahead. Bucks in Miami, we have that game 3 of that series taking place in Miami. That will be tomorrow evening, 6:30 our time. Series is tied 1-1, of course, after the 2 games in Milwaukee, and hoping to see if Giannis will be able to play after that bruised lower back. And for the Brewers, again, it's 3 games this weekend against Boston, and then 3 games against Detroit, and then 3 games against the Angels. All 9 games without a day off. After this 9-game homestand, the Brewers will take a day off and then head west again with games in Colorado and San Francisco for the first week of May. All right, we'll take a look at some headlines around the state, around the country, coming up in just a sec. This is Up North News Radio, coming from Madison this week on a Friday.
Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna lay in my bed. Don't feel like picking up my phone, so leave a message at the tone. 'Cause today I swear I'm not doing anything.
Hey, I just really feel like the Republican Party is taking Bruno Mars to heart and not doing any substantive work. That's what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes here, and that the work that they're doing is just, it's just downright dangerous. It's dangerous to this country, and that's not hyperbole. If you put yourself in the frame of mind of somebody who isn't white, Christian, and has political power, it's simply that it's that basic when you look through the things that have been happening most recently here, as opposed to, I don't know, making healthcare more affordable, helping people get a good education, attracting good people to Wisconsin, and so forth. For example, in Washington right now, again, there's this debt ceiling that the U.S. is bumping up against because Republicans in Congress won't approve paying the bills of spending that's already been authorized. And one of the things that they have proposed is rolling back certain things that, again, would be good for Americans, credits for, you know, green energy, you know, student loan debt relief and what have you. And one of them that, again, sounds to them so basic because they hate taxes so much, they hate the IRS so much, that they would roll back what the Inflation Reduction Act did to help make it more efficient. Because when it's more efficient, then there are fewer tax cheats, usually at very high incomes, and then all the rest of us have to make up the difference. And they feed this hatred of government, and specifically the IRS, by starving it of resources so that there is a backlog of work, there are backlogs in the call centers. Well, Democrats and President Biden, through the Inflation Reduction Act, beefed up funding for the IRS in some areas. And Republicans, of course, right away said, well, that's 87,000 agents that are going to attack the middle class. No, it was never about more agents and more enforcement. It was about better service and cracking down on high roller tax cheats. So we've mentioned all this before. I hinted earlier in the week that it actually had been proven to be better. And here are the actual statistics. Now, this year, the IRS answered, get this, The IRS answered 2 million more calls this season than a year ago. Last year, the wait time, if you had a tax question, and I know some of you did, you had to call on behalf of maybe your aging parents or, you know, your kid or yourself or what have you, because you had a change in circumstances. Last year, the average wait time was 27 minutes to talk to a body. A lot of people hung up, didn't get answers to their questions. This year, the average wait time, 4 minutes, from 27 down to 4. The agency served, it said, more than 100,000 more taxpayers with in-person customer service. And here's the thing about the backlog. They digitized 80 times more paper forms than a year ago, clearing a backlog of unprocessed 2022 individual tax returns. Look, folks can talk about abolishing the IRS all they want, and again, nobody likes paying taxes, nobody likes overpaying taxes, but until you find a better way to fund the things that make this country work, that make it efficient, that give everybody opportunities, then this is the system we're going to have. So why wouldn't you fund it appropriately so that we're all not getting jerked around on hold and can't get answers to our questions? Democrats did that through the Inflation Reduction Act. Republicans want to pull it all back and make things worse for folks once again. Closer to home, there was a legislative committee meeting up at UW-Eau Claire yesterday. It was an assembly committee that held its second hearing, public hearing, on what it says is the discouragement or the dampening or the restrictions on free speech on campus, specifically conservative points of view. So here's this committee that's going to talk about the lack of opportunity, it says, for some people to speak out. And the agenda says invited speakers only. So Republicans were setting up the committee, going all the way up to Eau Claire, but rather than having a true public hearing, it was a show. We're going to come here. We're going to invite people who are going to say, you know, we are so oppressed as conservatives on campus, but we're not going to let anybody else talk. Well, State Senator Jeff Smith from the Eau Claire area said, quote, having speakers by invitation only for a free speech hearing says all you need to know about the committee's intentions. Students are the individuals most directly impacted by free speech rights at UW institutions. Hearing their voices should be a priority in addressing obstacles to free speech on campus. Legislators should use their platform and authority to elevate the voices of students, not prioritize their own agendas. Rather than wasting time manufacturing a crisis, let's deal with the crises students are asking us for help with, like funding the UW system, mental health access, and student aid. State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire said, quote, I've heard some of my GOP colleagues complain that campuses are too far left. They have only themselves to blame for losing ground on college campuses. It's not indoctrination, but the Republican agenda that turns off many young people. Students want clean water, access to reproductive health care, and a learning environment free from gun violence. The Republican Party is not supplying that for students. As Wisconsin considers proposed legislation that mirrors restrictions across the country that criminalize drag performances and ban books related to race, gender, and sexuality, I hope, Emerson writes, that continued discussions in the Assembly regarding intellectual diversity will include the voices of marginalized Wisconsinites who have a great deal to contribute to our understanding of censorship, discrimination, and freedom of speech and expression. But that is not what we're getting, because in Washington yesterday, on a strict party line vote, all the Republicans voting for it, all the Democrats voting against it, transgender athletes whose biological sex assigned at birth was male would be barred from competing on girls or women's sports teams at federally supported schools and colleges under legislation pushed through Thursday by House Republicans, checking off another high-profile item on their social agenda. That's great. You checked a box. The bill's not going to pass. It's not getting taken up in the Senate. It's not getting taken up or signed by President Biden. Because again, as we discussed yesterday with our guest, we don't have time for bullying. When you're bullying trans kids or trans college students, you're bullying kids. You're bullying college students. It's just that continued punching down, attacking an amazingly small number of people who want to compete in sports with the gender that they've moved to. Not because you don't go through all this to win a trophy. You don't go through all this to win a medal. But when you go through what you go through in life and then want to compete like anybody else does, why don't we take that time doing the research into the right way to move forward with sports in America, based either on gender or testosterone levels or certain other medical or biological markers or what have you, not just because a birth certificate 18 to 22 years ago said something. But it's this continual punching down that Republicans feel like they have to do again and again and again on media. And I think of that old guy in Kansas City who shot through the door at a young black teenager because he was so scared. And it turns out his grandkids talked about how all he did all day was sit there and watch right-wing media, sat in his recliner and listened hour after hour after hour, hearing that anybody who wasn't an old white guy like him was some kind of a threat. So that when somebody came to his door, he couldn't just say, no, you got the wrong house. This is so-and-so terrace. You want to go to so-and-so street. You know, it's over here. No, it was shoot first and ask questions later because of the steady stream of paranoia that every Republican in Congress yesterday cast a vote for. You know, and Tom Tiffany and others were crowing about it, saying, you know, we're going to protect our daughters. You know, if you really cared about your daughters and sports, there are plenty of other ways to address the issues that they're facing in terms of funding, in terms of resources, in terms of access. You could really be looking out for your daughters who compete in sports, but you choose not to. You choose to punch down instead. Or, you know, as our friend Scott Ross put it, asking if, you know, Wisconsin media is going to follow up on this vote to eradicate trans people from sports competition. Shouldn't they be treated as if they voted to ban all Christians or all straights from playing sports? And it's a fair question to ask because, again, when we're talking about discrimination, it again makes you wonder, what if you were in a country where the group that was in power suddenly decided you're no longer worthy? And maybe you might say, well, I would just have to live with it. I'm a guest in their home. We're not talking about being a guest in somebody's home. We're talking about fellow roommates, our fellow Americans, our brothers and sisters, our fellow roommates. And this was a home that was not set up to be a white Christian nationalist nation. It was one that called for liberty and justice for all. Which is, by the way, something I learned from a couple of folks in the legislature, and you might actually ever hear me say that if we're doing the Pledge of Allegiance in public. The words "for all" at the end of that Pledge of Allegiance, say it good and loud so that it underscores what it is that we want, what we stand for, is that everybody should be treated with respect. But we're not getting that because of places like, well, Tennessee, which has had plenty of other problems lately. What has the Tennessee legislature done lately about all of this? They've now taken moves to gut citizen oversight of police matters, making the police less accountable for violence against innocent people or excessive violence against suspects. And then there's Iowa, where House Republicans yesterday passed a bill that would severely limit the auditing that can be done by the Iowa State Auditor. Why would you tie the hands of your state auditor, the one watchdog charged with making sure that our tax money is spent wisely? Isn't that what Republicans always say, that they're about fiscal conservatism? They always want to crack down on waste, fraud, and abuse, and so you would think they would welcome audits. Until you learn that the state auditor is the only statewide Democrat left in office after last year's election. And so this bill, passed by the legislature yesterday in Iowa, restricts the information that the auditor's office can access. and that the auditor may only access the information if the agency being audited agrees that the information is necessary for an audit. And so as the state auditor Rob Sand noted, let's be clear about this. This is the destruction of democratic norms. The people of Iowa elected me, and now the legislature is changing the rules for how this office operates because they didn't like what I did, which sounds an awful lot like what Wisconsin Republicans have done or tried to do to the state treasurer's office and the secretary of state's office. These are the things that must be considered every election to make sure we have people looking out for us and not people that just want to sit around twiddling their thumbs and enjoying their power. We'll be back with Kia Vakil after this. You're up north.
Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Let's visit now, as we do this time every week, with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil out in California. Kia, hello. How are you?
Hello, Pat. I am well.
Good, good. Good to see you again and talk to you here on the radio. Talk about some of the stories of the past week that you've been covering for Courier Newsroom for all of our eight state-based outlets, not just Up North News in Wisconsin, but The Gander in Michigan, Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, Iowa Starting Line, and on it goes. We may get to a couple of these states here, but from a national perspective, you know, there are definitely some stories that dominated the headlines this week. Perhaps none more so in our business, which is at the intersection of news and politics, than the Dominion defamation lawsuit against Fox quote-unquote News, which turned out they settled on Tuesday. Still a substantial settlement, and I guess the interesting thing, and I don't know how much of it is navel-gazing, Kia, how much of this is, you know, substantive? Will we see real change in the way that right-wing media operates? So why don't we start, just with your own personal view of whether the settlement has impact or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has an impact, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, a sudden overnight shift in terms of how right-wing media operates, unfortunately. You know, Fox agreed to pay $787.5 million to settle this case minutes before the trial was supposed to begin. And you don't do that unless you know you're, you know, potentially going to face a far bigger, penalty by going to trial. Again, that's a lot of money, and that basically suggests that they knew they had no case and that Dominion was going to take them to the cleaners. But Fox News is a giant corporation. They make billions of dollars every year. It's not like going to change how they do business. They are a right-wing propaganda outlet. They have been that for decades. They've really just leaned into it more and more. You know, maybe 15 years ago, there was a credible argument that they were real news. Now that, you know, that doesn't exist. And I think really where the potential for change does lie is in the future lawsuits. They are being sued by Smartmatic, which is another voting machine company, for $2.7 billion. And that case is still pending. Newsmax is also being sued by Dominion. Newsmax is another right-wing TV station. So it really just depends. If this is the first in a bunch of dominoes to fall, I think you could see some real, you know, changes to how far they're willing to go with lies and defamation. But this settlement in and of itself isn't going to be, you know, a big shift.
I think when people look back, the thing that will strike them most is that how did they think they were going to get away with telling a lie about a private company and its products or services? It's one thing to lie about, you know, Joe Biden or Hunter Biden or whatever the case may be. It's another thing to take an actual company and accuse them of rigging their machines when you have no evidence. To me, it's the clownishness of this is like the person who says, well, you can't be offended because I said with all due respect. I said with all due respect. So you can't be offended. Yeah, you can still be offended. And you can't lie about a company and think that the company's lawyers are just going to say, oh, yeah, let it go. I can't imagine what Fox was thinking. I mean, it's one thing to maybe hint at it the first time, but to keep coming back to it over and over again, how did their lawyers not stop them early out of the gate on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've read through some of the court filings that came out, you know, in the past couple months that we've covered before. And, you know, what it suggests, what it shows, actually, is just in the days, weeks and months following the election in 2020, Fox execs were panicking. Fox talent was panicking because their viewers were furious at them for calling Arizona. They were furious because initially Fox wasn't really down with the conspiracy theories the first, you know, week or so. But their viewers started fleeing to Newsmax and One American News, who were giving those conspiracies daylight. And so from the top down, you know, you see Suzanne Scott, who's, I think, CEO or chairman. I might have her exact title wrong. But, you know, kind of basically pushing that we need to respect our audience or whatever the language was. And so, you know, they were operating from a moment, from a place of fear and panic. And instead of, you know, actually reporting the news or being honest with viewers, they caved and just amplified these conspiracy theories. I don't think the lawyers were really listened to in any real way. And frankly, Fox has gotten away with so much over the years that they probably never dreamed that they'd actually be held a little bit accountable. I don't want to, you know, pretend like Fox is suddenly going to reverse course because of one lawsuit. They make a ton of money. But, you know, I think they have such hubris that they just never thought this would happen.
Yeah, hubris was the word I was going to latch onto as well. And it was a long overdue comeuppance. And now we wait to see, like you said, how the other lawsuits go. And to what degree do they change anything other than don't lie about a private company's product or service? You're going to get burned when you do that. This is all about fealty to Donald Trump, which honestly still mystifies me after 7+ years of this. But he's out there, and despite all of the legal troubles that he's in, despite all of the buffoonery, he is still leading the current Republican pack of candidates. A lot of folks thought Florida Governor Ron DeSantis might be the less messy version of Donald Trump. That is not working out for him this week at all. It feels like a lot of Republicans have already given him a test drive and said, no, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, coming off last November's elections, DeSantis was considered, you know, the alternative to Trump because he's equally extreme in terms of policy, more effective at getting stuff done, and less outwardly, you know, he doesn't tweet crazy things 12 times a day. But the case for him is that he's more stable. But, you know, he has come out. He hasn't even launched his campaign for president. And over the last 6 weeks, his polling numbers have cratered. You see his donors backing away because they suddenly see someone who's, you know, not really competitive. He's signing extreme abortion bans into law. He's leaving his state while residents are underwater in Fort Lauderdale. He's not even doing the very basics of a pre-launch, which is to secure endorsements from lawmakers in your own state. We have several Florida Republicans in the House who've endorsed Trump. DeSantis met with other Republicans in D.C. yesterday, and one of them walked out of the meeting and endorsed Trump immediately. And, you know, that's been a criticism of him, is that he's really bad at sort of the, you know, interpersonal part of politics, which is a huge part of it, you know, when you're an elected official and when you're campaigning. And Trump, you know, for all his incredible, incredible flaws, knows how to use his power to get what he wants from other lawmakers, and he understands the base better than anybody.
And he knows how to insult and engage in bullying, if you will, or at least just making somebody else look bad. And I don't know who did his ad with, you know, making Ron DeSantis, you know, eat pudding with his fingers or whatever. But I mean, it just in such a succinct manner, just really took DeSantis down a peg or two.
Yeah, I mean, DeSantis is voters, swing voters, most voters who don't live online or aren't in the like deep right-wing base, don't want to vote for like really strange sideshow candidates. We saw that last year. And DeSantis has done a good job of hiding that, but that is who he is at his core. He has really extreme ideological policies. And, you know, that ad paired that with, you know, his cuts, his wanting to cut Social Security, which is extreme and unpopular among Republican voters, with a really strange, you know, anecdote about him eating pudding with his fingers. That's weird. And a lot of voters don't like weird. And, you know, one could argue Trump is also weird, which I would. But his instincts, DeSantis's instincts just, you know, do not seem to be there for a nationwide run.
No, I think, and he's far from the first one who assumed he had just enough talent that basically everybody would swarm to him and mm-hmm. lift him up on their shoulders and carry him to victory. Many a candidate has made that assumption very, very poorly, I hasten to add. And yeah, he seems to be in, you know, in that same vein. I will say again, it is April of 2023. A lot can happen between now and then to Trump, to DeSantis, to all sorts of folks. And it comes back to one of the things I said about the Dominion settlement, that, you know, there's still plenty of folks out there who would consider themselves center right. They're not right wingers. They don't like the extremism, but they're looking for a center right person to support. And that person's not really there. You know, some try and then they kind of fade away. You know, Chris Christie had his little scandal in New Jersey, and, you know, Nikki Haley is trying to be something that she's not. So I think that's still the theme, is like, DeSantis, thanks for playing. Mm-hmm. Now we'll look to see if somebody else wants to fill that center right role and be attractive enough to peel off people that go, I don't like that Trump's extreme, but, you know, he's going to win and this other person's not.
Yeah. And well, here's the problem is DeSantis, that is a lane that was available to him, but he seems to have committed to the strategy of trying to outflank Trump on the right, because that's maybe correctly, he thinks that's how he can win the primary. But, you know, that alienates a lot of the would-be voters for him who are more center right, you know, banning abortion at 6 weeks, attacking private businesses, you know, just a lot of his policies are too extreme. And, you know, whether it's Nikki Haley or Tim Scott, who's trying to take that more center right lane, they, you know, are just being totally crowded out by the coverage of Trump and DeSantis, because they're more popular. They are actively, you know, Trump isn't in power, but he's the party figurehead. DeSantis is a governor of the nation's third biggest state. He can make headlines every day. Tim Scott's a senator in the minority. He can't do very much. Nikki Haley's a former governor. She can't do very much. So they're really facing an uphill battle. And even if, you know, they are able to peel off 10, maybe 20%, you know, that ain't going to cut it. So it's Trump's race to lose, for better or worse.
All right, last thing we'll tackle is Congress has been in session for 100 days here. Again, nobody had high hopes for them anyway, but one thing they've got to get done is a farm bill. Can you talk about the importance of getting something done on there and where things stand?
Yeah, so the farm bill, for anyone who doesn't know, is this huge piece of legislation that is renewed every 5 years. And it's, you know, was first passed during the Great Depression, you know, was initially mostly to help farmers recover from that. But now it's this massive bill, which three quarters of which actually is not really farm related at all. It funds food assistance for 41 million Americans. So this SNAP program, which rural, urban, suburban people all rely on for food, that's funded by the Farm Bill. So that's up for renewal this year. There's commodity programs to help farmers, you know, basically stay commercially viable. There's subsidies, there's crop insurance, there's conservation. So it's a huge bill. There's broadband and bioenergy programs. It's a massive deal, especially for rural America. And the last farm bill expires in the end of September this year. So there's already negotiations ongoing. It's going to be, you know, a huge deal probably into the summer and early fall. Once, you know, the debt ceiling issue is resolved, hopefully. I think that the farm bill will be the next big piece of legislation. And, you know, it stands to impact communities all over the country. So for anyone who's listening, I would definitely recommend reading up on it.
And the thing that may end up really holding things up is this increased determination by some Republicans to continue punching down on low-income folks. You had Iowa legislators this week voting to reduce SNAP benefits. Pandemic aid related to food assistance was cut or allowed to expire, I should say, by Republicans in Congress. And these are things that, you know, they hurt farmers. They don't just hurt poor folks, but there just doesn't seem to be much hesitation to punch down whenever some folks think they can get a little rise out of others. Kia Vakil, our national correspondent for Courier Newsroom out in California. Thank you again so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you, Pat.
When you're away from your radio, you're never far away from the show. Catch our live stream at our Facebook page. Search for Up North News WI. We'll be right back.
I don't care if Monday's blue, Tuesday's gray, and Wednesday too. Thursday, I don't care about.
What day is it?
It's Friday. I'm in love.
There we go. It's Friday.
Friday.
It's Friday. We are in love with morning radio. Kristen Lyerly decides to do it every couple of days for us, no matter where she is in the great Northwest and or the upper Midwest. You're at some undisclosed location now. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's so good to be alive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, again, down here in the southern part of the state, it's, you know, it's a little bit slight overcast, but otherwise bright. But up north, I know it was rainy, overcast, cold. You had a very long multi-hour drive to your work assignment this weekend. It was cold and drizzly. And yeah, we're ready for a change.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready for spring, like real spring.
We're ready for upbeat tunes like that one from The Cure, Friday I'm in Love. It was part of their 9th studio album, which debuted at number 1 in the UK, number 2 in the US on this day in 1992. Which is also the birthday of lead singer Robert Smith. I like the song a lot. I've got a small collection of Friday songs. You know, I'm sure we'll play Huey Lewis a couple days off coming up in the next hour. And well, you know,
For the weekend?
Working for the weekend. Yes, another great one. Mm-hmm. Do you have another personal Friday song that?
No.
You have to break glass in case of emergency.
No, I usually just, I have a playlist, like a go-to energy playlist. Mm-hmm. So that's it's reliable. I know if I turn on that playlist that my mood will immediately elevate.
Gotcha. All right. Let's stay. Number one hit this day in 1973 was from Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Tie a yellow ribbon. Yeah.
You got it. Which, by the way, is a fictional story that Tony Orlando writes about somebody getting out of prison and taking the bus home and everything. People wondered if it had any, like, personal tie-in or any anecdotal. And he says, nope, just a nice song that he wrote. Made it up. On this day in 1509, one of history's true characters, Henry VIII, ascends the throne of England on the death of his father, coincidentally named Henry VII. Henry VIII was 17 at the time. Best known for his 6 marriages and his disagreement with the Pope about said marriages, leading him to spin off the Church of England and appoint himself head of the Church, claiming the divine right of kings trumps papal supremacy. He frequently used charges of treason and hearsay to quell dissent, and those accused were often executed without a formal trial. It's only a rumor that he assumed the throne while wearing a goofy big red trucker's cap that said, "Make England Great Again."
That's a really bad joke, Pat.
But there's a lot of the same kind of power-hungry tendencies are there. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, another monarch is noted in the news today. This would have been the 97th birthday for Queen Elizabeth. Elizabeth II, mm-hmm. who passed away not long ago, was born this day in 1926. Annie opened on Broadway this day in 1977. It's at this point that Kristen will now give us a rendition of The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow.
I desperately want to, but I'm going to scare the listeners.
Like, I know what you're all thinking out there. It's like, wait, she showed restraint on belting out a tune? What's going on over here?
That's one of my favorites. That's like such a good cheerful song.
There you go. It's part of the playlist here. Secretary's Day started this day in 1952, now known as Administrative Professionals Day. Let's see. Annie McDowell, American model, actress. You know her from Groundhog Day and others. Born this day in 1958, which makes her, what, 65? Wow. This is Amy Stewart's Knock on Wood. It hit number one this day in 1979. All right, let's see. I don't want to run out of time here. So in the middle of all this, we're also going to say that it's time to give away some Brewers tickets. It was on this day in 1982 that Raleigh Fingers of the Brewers became the first pitcher to record 300 saves. And that leads us to our trivia question. Two tickets to Sunday's game against the Red Sox. We'll email them to you, so don't call unless you can use it. But this is the week, April 15th of 1987. Who threw the only solo no-hitter in Brewers history? Who threw the only solo no-hitter in Brewers history on April 15th, 1987? First one through with the correct answer and who wants the tickets is going to get them for Sunday's game. And that's, again, those phone numbers are Pat, 844-877-2789 and 715-388-7155. Who threw that?
If you led with Raleigh Fingers, does that mean that this can't be Raleigh Fingers?
That is very correct because, we're going to rule out Raleigh Fingers.
Mm-hmm. But he had a great mustache. Do you remember that guy's mustache?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, talk about characters. This this day in 1981, Weird Al Yankovic made his TV debut. He was getting some mileage out of the Queen parody of Another One Rides the Bus. And he did that on Tom Snyder's old Tomorrow Show. The number one song this day in 1984 was from Phil Collins. You're the only one who really knew me at all. Take it, Kristen. So take a look at me now. She's only going to lip sync all these things. But there's Phil Collins, number one, 1984, with Against All Odds. His first solo number one hit. He would have six more after that. Sad occasion in history. Prince died this day in 2016, so 7 years ago now, at the age of 57 after overdosing on fentanyl. Elvis Presley had two number one hits on the calendar on this day in 1956 with Heartbreak Hotel and in 1962 on this day with Good Luck Charm. Oh, you found Heartbreak Hotel.
You sing this one. I could die. Although
it's always crowded, this one could be a good karaoke attempt. Emphasis on attempt.
I'll put it on the list.
Yeah, you do that. for the eventual Civic Media karaoke party.
I have a list.
I wish that was true. I know we all keep saying we're going to make one.
Your name is next to Heartbreak Hotel. I'm doing it right now.
Nothing scares me more than the thought that might actually come to fruition. All right. Aaron, I'm not looking at the phone screen, so I will just mention again, if we get somebody, you just give me a wave or jump on in as you did before.
Sounds good. But so call, we haven't had any callers.
But, okay, there we go. Still, the tickets are there. Two tickets for Sunday's 1 p.m. game against Boston. Who threw the only no-hitter, solo no-hitter in Brewers history, April 15th, 1987. By the way, you're saying, wait, was there more than one? Yeah, there was a combined no-hitter. Remember that about a year and a half ago from Corbin Burns and Josh Hader back in September of 2021 against Cleveland. But only one person has thrown a solo no-hitter in Brewers history, so feel free to call during the news break there and see if those tickets are still available for you to win at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Kristen, we got a lot of news to cover in the next hour here, including a tale of two states in how you handle Medicaid expansion and a little follow-up to yesterday's discussion with a pediatric psychologist. So do you mind sticking around for all this?
Let's jump in and do it.
All right. A little Elvis for us, a little news and commercials for you coming up next on Up North News Radio.